there's no marketing cure for sucking, which is like, if the product is no good, it doesn't matter if you're the best marketer in the world.
Are we recording?
Oh my God. Better Product, the only show that takes a behind the scenes look into how digital products are created,
the business is built around them, and how you too can innovate better product. I'm Christian.
I'm Anna.
Welcome to today's show. Today's episode goes into territory Anna and I don't focus on too often, product marketing. Our guest today is Dave Gerhart, VP of Marketing from Drift. And the biggest thing you can expect to take away from this episode
Hold on. Before we get there, let's slow down. I know you're excited. First of all, Drift is the new way businesses buy from businesses. They coined this term conversational marketing, which we will touch on in the conversation.
Conversational marketing is about bringing conversations back to marketing and sales. Marketing and sales have become basically a one-way communication channel where you just kind of, you do marketing and then you don't actually want to hear anything back.
Dave has been with Drift from seemingly the beginning. He joined the company after having DC, otherwise known as David Cancel, the CEO, on his own local podcast and learned they were hiring their first marketing person. And his first assignment was to build an audience.
And so we had like no website traffic, no leads. We had no blog, we had no podcast, we had none of the things that we have today. And so my only mission, the only mission David got me was like, I need you to build an audience for us.
So that's where he started. He started creating content, he started building an email list before they were ready to market their product.
I think most companies, like, they come up out of nowhere, nobody's ever heard of them, and they're like, hey, you don't know who we are, but use our product. And even if you have the best product in the world, people don't believe that unless they know you, unless they trust you, unless you have a brand. And so for us, it was brand and company first and then product.
Since then, those things have obviously switched for Drift where they are now focusing on their product. But first, it was to focus on building an audience. And this is something we've talked about on the show before. This idea or question of how you market a product before you have a product, or how do you build an audience when you don't yet have a product? Hear what Dave has to say. And be sure to stick around after our conversation because we've got our own Mike Reynolds, CEO of Innovate Map, to give his take. Now on to the show.
We knew in April we were going to launch something, so this was in October. And so basically the whole goal was like when we had our product in April, we get to say, hey, thanks for, you know, you've been liking our content, you've been listening to our podcast, you've been watching our videos, you've been checking out our blog, you've been on our email list. Now I have something for you. Go and check this out. Sign up for free. Like, and so that was really the goal, was build an audience, because eventually we were going to launch something, and to have a warm audience to be able to launch to was so important.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that hopefully starting to catch fire a little bit more. But I think what people might struggle with is, I think a lot of people think, well, if I've got a market, I need a product that I'm actually marketing. But you didn't have anything in the beginning. So love to dive in a little bit more to that April timeframe before the October launch. What are you talking about? How are you building an audience when you don't have a product yet?
This is like the $1 million question, but I actually think it should be like the 10-cent question, because why are you starting a company, right? If you don't know who you're starting this company for, or building this product for, then you're never going to be able to market anything. And so I think the biggest mistake that happens in the early days of a company is the product team, PMs, designers, engineers, they're going out and they're building, they're talking to customers, right? But that's all considered like over here. And then the marketing team has to show up and be like, okay, now what? But to me, all those notes from customer development, getting outside of the building, talking to customers, that is gold for marketing content, because you're already getting pain from potential customers, right? You're getting challenges, you're getting obstacles, you're getting what they want, their dreams, their desires. All that stuff that you use to scope out a product that you might build is money for marketing. And so we had the product manager, Matt Bilotti, he's still here, awesome guy. He was out with our CTO, just like doing customer research with all these people. And they were posting it on the wiki, and I was able to comb through that and find like, man, there's so much content we could create in here that has nothing to do with our product. So they were, the market we were going after was initially product marketers, because it was a small wedge into this bigger puzzle of marketing people. And, digging through these notes, all the product marketing people that they talked to had one thing in common, which was nobody understands what we do. That was it. That has nothing to do with technology. That has nothing to do with the product. That has nothing to do with selling anything. But they all had this same thing in common, which is like, nobody understands what we do. And so the very first piece of content I created at Drift was this in-depth guide. I interviewed a bunch of people and I published it. It was, what is product marketing? Right? All these people in product marketing had nothing to rally around. And so I wanted to create that piece of content that would be this magnet for them that they could show to their friend, you know, this is what I do. And so we created that piece. And I think it actually, if you go to Google and type in product marketing, I'm pretty sure it's still the number one search result for product marketing today, which is something that I created almost 4 years ago. But that's an example of like how you can use that content, that information that you're getting from your product team to create marketing content. And then that one thing led to another. Oh, now we got a bunch of product marketing people interested in us. Okay. What if we started the only newsletter for product marketing people? We wanted to have their email address. So we said, hey, once a week, I didn't have any content, but I'm going to curate the web. I'm going to find all the best articles on product marketing. And every Sunday night, I'm going to send you an email with the best articles in product marketing. Guess who's going to subscribe to that newsletter? Product marketing people, the people you want to sell to. And so that, you know, one thing led to another. And to kind of quote David, our CEO, you know, we always talk about doing the things that don't scale, but I think that so often that gets misconstrued. Like people think like do the things don't scale means like surprise and delight somebody and send them a t-shirt. And like we do all that. But to me, the things that don't scale was like the way that I got traffic on that first blog post was I went to LinkedIn and I found 15 product marketers that I didn't know. And I messaged them and I said, hey, I wrote this article about product marketing, kind of deep dive on what is product marketing. Thought you'd like it. Can I send over the link? And that worked. And then they tell their team and they tell their friends. So we're always like, all marketing starts with that. People have this dream that like you just wake up and you send an email to 50,000 people and you have, you know, 500 customers, but it never works that way. It's always like this like slow like pulling of a rope, right? One, we always say like one-to-one, hand-to-hand is the only way.
So Drift went out and you guys basically created your own category. So tell us a little bit about that and why you decided to do that as opposed to kind of competing in the existing categories that were out there to build that audience.
Because we didn't want to compete in that existing category. Because there's too much noise, there's too much competition. And so there's a great book called The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing by Al Reese and Jack Trout. And I think number two or so or whatever it is create a category, right? If you can't be first in a category, you got to create your own. And we entered this marketing technology world where there was literally 6,800 competitors. And so the challenge is even if we were uniquely different than any of those companies, nobody would believe that. And so we had two options. We could either try to compete and try to convince the world that we were somehow different than these 6,800 other companies and slightly better and maybe have, we didn't want to fight the future war. I don't ever want to fight the future war. Like every customer, like, you know, I think the future war thing is a cop out during the sales process, right? Which is like, well, in MailChimp, I can do it this way. In Constant Contact, I can't do it that way. So I'm going to go with them, right? That means you didn't do a good enough job, you know, selling them on the brand and the vision and the mission of the company to me. And so for us, very early on, it was obvious that like we're going to create a whole new way of doing things. And so we have to resegment this market, and we're going to go and create something that is much bigger. Now, the challenge is you could definitely build a good business inside of that world with those 6,000 other companies. There's no doubt you can make a couple million dollars easily in that world. But like the goal for Drift is to be this enduring company, right? This the founders talk about being a company that lasts much longer than we do, a pillar company that's going to be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road still there. And so by definition, all those companies have created their own category. There's a great book. Another book is a book called Play Bigger by a guy named Christopher Lockhead and a couple other writers. And they basically talk about how all the most successful companies of the last 20 years were category creators. The most successful IPOs were all category creators. And so very early on, we knew that the goals and the ambitions for the company were so big that the only way to get there was to create a category. But you don't just get to like wake up and be like, I want to have a category. You have to have all the right ingredients, which is like, you know, there's kind of some existing pattern that people are already doing marketing and sales, but the results weren't starting to work like they used to. Things were starting to break in that world. And so we started talking about this new way, and all of a sudden more people that like people outside of Drift started talking about it. And then we were like, wait a second, this is much bigger than us. And so a category only works if it's much bigger than you. Conversational marketing, the category can't be Drift. There has to be competitors. There has to be other people that come into the category to help make it bigger and elevate it. And so it was once we started to see people from outside of the company talk about conversational marketing that we started to know like, this is something big. This is something massive here. And the category, like the hard part about it is it just happens. You don't sit down and like, okay, by April 15th, we're going to have a category, right? Like we always wanted to create it, but we didn't know when it was going to happen, how fast it was going to happen. a category happens when more people are talking about it outside of the company than you are.
So at some point, you have got to say, this is the category we're going to own. And then you start doubling down on it, write books and all that stuff. How did that part happen?
To me, like, you can't have a category unless you have a name for it, right? And you have to have a name that everybody's going to talk about and being able to repeat. And because of this topic, like, I've talked to a lot of people and they're like, Dave, I want to give you the pitch. We're creating a category for the case for these remotes, and we're going to call it. And it's like, what? Are people even asking for that? And so the way that this became a category was, we just needed to name it. We knew we had a feeling it would take off, but we hadn't given a name. And so if you don't have a name for it, people can't tell you that they're part of something, right? How does somebody tell you that they're part of this movement if you don't even have a name for it? And so, like, marketing lesson number one, you know, marketing 101 was like, name it. And so we had kind of messed around trying to name it. We called it conversation-driven marketing, conversation marketing. And we just didn't like any of the names because it didn't sound like sexy. It didn't sound like iPad or tablet, right? It was like conversational marketing. But we had to pick one. And so we found the one that we hated the least, which was conversational marketing. And then something magic happened, which is once we started calling it conversational marketing, the whole world started saying it back to us. I'm doing conversational marketing. I'm doing conversational marketing. This is my conversational marketing. Competitors, customers, analysts, influencers, G2 crowd, everybody was starting to talk about conversational marketing. And that's when we were like, whoa, okay. That's when we doubled down. Go bigger on the conference. Write the book, right? Write all the content. Create conversational marketing university. Create all the stuff around conversational marketing. And so it was really like, the whole idea had been there, but it wasn't until the name that it took off. But it's not like the name was what made it happen. It was like people are doing it and they're already doing it, but they just didn't have a name for it, right? It's like you know, 10 years ago, you used to like do burpees and pull-ups and box jumps and be on a rower. And you kind of always did these workouts that like kind of jacked up your heart rate and you really liked them, high intensity workouts. But it wasn't until somebody called that CrossFit that you were like, yeah, I do CrossFit, right? And so that's an example of, like, I think the same thing happened in the category, which is like, it then pulls up all these people. And then you have all these people who now can give, I can tell my mom, I'm doing CrossFit. Not like I go to the gym. I do like burpees and box jumps and like, no, I do CrossFit. Like, it's a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, if I were also to guess too, tying it back to building the audience first is required. You couldn't start the category if nobody's listening, but you had a lot of people listening to you at that point.
Yeah. And then it's just also like, unless there's people there, you can't have a category. So I think you have to have this like groundswell. You have to have people using the product, asking questions, wanting more. And then like a category starts to form. Apple did not invent the tablet, but they created the iPad, and the iPad grew the category of tablets. And so lots of other companies that have tablets, but Apple is the leader. And then the other example they give is Jawbone, like the headset, the Bluetooth headset. They had a great product. They had product market fit. Everybody was using it, but they failed to create like a bigger category around it. And there were no other competitors in it, and the category didn't grow bigger than them. And so they missed out on the opportunity to create like a wearable, you know, Bluetooth category as opposed to just being a headset.
There's something that I've been kind of curious to ask you that's, I think, a little bit related to this, which is your brand around you all is very prominent as well. I would like to understand if there was any conscious decision about sort of elevating yourselves and tying that to Drift.
No. Again, there was no like meeting, which is like, all right, Dave, you're gonna come here, you're gonna be the face of a lot of this stuff. And what it was we are a marketer. Like, I'm a marketer who's doing marketing to marketers, and so it's really easy for me to create content without having to like if I was doing marketing at a cybersecurity company, which I would be terrible at, I don't know anything about it, I wouldn't be the face of it because I would need to go find somebody else. And so I would need to, every time I wanted to say something, I would need to like get somebody else's opinion, right? But like, the amazing part about being in this industry is like, this is what I know and live and breathe. And so if I'm walking to work and I'm like, you know what, I just had an idea, I can pull out my phone and make a video and talk to the world to try to start a conversation, and that becomes marketing. Or we can just turn on the podcast mics and just go and rant about something, that becomes marketing. Or we can do a podcast and I can just not have a script and just talk, and that becomes marketing. And so I think it's more of like a combination of the industry that we're in, but also like having some background in this space. But ultimately, the reason why we do it is because people don't want to hear from a logo. We all want to hear from real people because buyers today are more skeptical than ever. And so nobody wants to be sold to. Nobody wants to be marketed to. And so the way you can cut through that is to be real. And so I want to be the same Dave. Like, I hope that I sound the same and feel the same as I do right now as you guys listening to my podcast or meeting me in person or bumping into me on a Sunday at the grocery store, right? Like, that should be who I am. And I think that that is like, that's my, like, to me, that's a secret to marketing today is like, you have to be real, you have to be authentic, you have to be human. And one of my favorite lessons is from Yvon Chouinard, who's the founder of Patagonia, in his book, Let My People Go Surfing, where Patagonia has an amazing brand. And he says, he talks about how their brand, he's like, people ask about our brand. And I say, our brand is just us. He goes, the reason why is because writing fiction is so much harder than writing nonfiction. And what he means by that is like, if I had to come into work every day and think about what is the Drift brand? Okay. All right. I got to go do this podcast with you guys and I got to be on brand, right? Our brand is us. Our brand is me. Our brand is being real. Our brand is being authentic. And so when you're real, then you don't have to fake it, right? You know, people say like it's easier to tell the truth than it is to lie. And the same thing is true in marketing. And so in the book, he talks about like how they didn't have to come up with some fake slogan or fake cartoon character like the Marlboro Man. They were like, this is us. So they only use pictures of them or their customers as an example.
You hear that a lot with B2C, like consumer-facing brands, right? It's very friendly. It's very approachable. You don't as often hear that in a B2B situation like you are with Drift. So tell me about your strategy in being more friendly and approachable and yourselves in that B2B space.
I don't think like none of us think like I'm B2C Dave and now I'm B2B Dave because I'm back at work. We're all people. And even people who say, but Dave, I'm in a very traditional, very, very old industry, very enterprise. I'm like, bullshit. Like that is, you are still marketing to people. That is how we all talk. That is how we all communicate. We're all people. We all have motivations, desires, fears, wants, needs, right? That have nothing to do with us at work. And so everything that we do from a marketing perspective is like, I want to connect with you as a person. And then as a person, we then earn the right, hopefully, to try to sell you our product or market our product. And so everything is always about starting there. And I think especially today because of technology, like, the lines have blurred so much between what's B2C, what's B2B. Like another example inside of B2B, everybody on the marketing team at Drift has access to like our marketing credit card and can buy today. And so there is not one buyer. And most people, like, you know, most good leaders, what they do is if somebody reaches out to sell them something, they say, I don't know, it's my team's decision. And they pass it to the team anyway. So I think there's really only one way to market today, and that's B2P, right? Like, or business to people. Like, there's no B2C, there's no B2B. It's all just marketing to people.
Sounds like a new category.
B2P.
B2P.
Does your team on the marketing side, do you have any ways that you sort of ensure that the trust and thought leadership you've built up on the marketing side gets translated through the product?
I think our marketing has become our brand, and I think we all have to be on the same team, and it doesn't matter what type of marketing that we do, whether it's this like, you know, reality TV type of marketing that you guys talked about or other type of marketing. Like in any business, if the product doesn't pay off on what marketing is delivering, then it's not going to work. And so I don't know what the solution is. It's just, you have to have a great product. Like this guy that I used to work with at Constant Contact, his name is Mark Schmulin, and I haven't heard from him forever, but he had this great quote where he said, there's no marketing cure for sucking, which is like, if the product is no good, it doesn't matter if you're the best marketer in the world. If you're the best marketer in the world, you're telling people like, think about it. You're the guy on the street. Come to my restaurant. Come on in. Come on in. It's the best. You actually go in the restaurant, you eat the food and it's terrible. Then it doesn't matter, right? And so there isn't some type of like meeting that we have or like sync or whatever. Like it's just marketing has become, marketing is our brand, and our brand has translated to so much more than marketing. Our brand has resonated into like our sales team, our product team, our HR team, like all tap into the Drift brand. And so I think they know, and we all know together, but I also can't be out there promising the market things that don't exist, right? So I think it's a balance of like, it starts with the product. what problem are we solving? And then how can we creatively go and tell that to the world to get them interested?
What does better product mean to you?
Better product to me means like things work the way that they should work, right? Which seems so silly, but so many times you go to pull up an app or you go to do something and it makes you feel stupid or doesn't actually like do the thing that you want to do. I think the best products almost get out of the way.
That was Dave Gerhart. The best way to get in touch with him is over at drift.com or email him directly, dg@drift.com.
And Anna, do you happen to know who wrote the book on conversational marketing?
That's a great question, Christian. Actually, Dave Gerhart just launched a book called Conversational Marketing. Make sure you grab a copy wherever books are sold.
Welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Now, with me and Mike in a room, it's always a problem. So we're still going to try to keep this under 10 minutes. And Anna,
can confirm.
Yes, Anna will make sure.
And one place to get started, Mike, love your thoughts on, we talked a lot with Dave about building an audience before a product is launched. So in your experience, I know you've done that in your past. Tell us your thoughts about that as a strategy.
Yeah, I think it's more of a modern strategy that's really starting to embrace more of a customer experience, how people buy. And when everything passed was maybe built up for one launch, as if it was an event that felt like it was almost an internal convenience to the company, you know, to celebrate it. When the reality is you want to keep momentum about your product all the way, even if you're drumming up momentum before it exists. And it's very digital, but the most practical example I could give you is like a movie. You know, you don't get told on Friday, this new movie's out. We're very proud of it. It's launched. You've got trailers, you've got things sneaking. There's buzz, coming soon stuff. There's digital stuff that, you know, reveals a little bit, builds a bit of an anticipation, right? That can work very well for a digital product, you know. So even if you're, you know, we often will recommend, even if you're a couple months out, just starting to even create awareness, have marketing campaigns where it isn't just an event. It's a series. It's honestly a consistent series of communications out there, whether that be before it's ready, certainly when it's ready, and then even reminding people that's not one and done after it's out, keeping a consistent education. And that people aren't going to buy the minute you just launch it, right? And that's just really at the heart of it.
I think that ties in well with what Dave was talking about. He was building the audience for Drift before they even had any product. He was just out there. His background's marketing, so he's out there marketing, you know, like a marketer would, and drumming up interest, but they didn't even have a product. But you're even talking about, if you are building a product, you should still be doing that, almost that as well, while you're building it.
Yeah, and I'd say it's absolutely essential if you're building a market, because you actually are going to have to educate people on what, on a world that doesn't exist today, on possibly terminology and speak that they're not familiar with today. So it's not like you're joining a commoditized market where your go-to-market strategy and messaging is why we're better than everyone else. This is why do you even exist in the first place? So it is absolutely imperative if you're like going to market with a novel or new idea or creating a space.
Dave talked about their market was product marketers, a market that not even a lot of people understand. And so they were putting out, I think he said they did some groups, they were putting out content. They were already building value with this market. And then they were, once, you know, they built this trust, they were like, hey, guess what else? We have a product. So it seems like it's a little different from traditional marketing where you're not just like, it's not just like warming people up. You're literally saying, we're one of you, you trust us. Guess what we've got?
Yeah, and I'd say what he's probably weaving in there is the brilliance and respect of brand playing in that role, where it's basically, I'm going to establish awareness of myself, our brand, trust, you know, giving content, educating the market, where very naturally then when you come out with a solution, if you've got kind of paved the way with some brand equity and trust and even admiration or fandom, people are going to be more willing to listen to your message and then more willing to even consider or sample your product.
The brand equity that you mentioned is a really good way. It's like a savings account. You don't want to make withdrawals before you have that brand equity. And I think withdrawal would be asking someone to buy your product. And you mentioned using brand to build up that brand equity. So once you have that product, it's almost like people are like, well, I trust these people, even though they weren't really even necessarily looking at you as a product person up until that point, but they certainly trust you with your thought leadership in the domain. So the second you come out with a product, they're like, I get it. I get your brand. I get what you're trying to do, and I'm going to buy from you.
So one way to be a part of that audience is by building your authenticity. And we've talked a lot here at Innovate Map about not just, you know,
B2P, business of people, but like business of user as a marketing channel in and of itself, as opposed to kind of traditional B2B sales models. So Mike, what are your thoughts about?
Yeah, so I mean, it's not as simple as B2C or B2B anymore. And I think if you're a traditional B2B business, you need to start paying attention to winning trends in B2C because they're starting to converge. Whether it's business to person, you're focusing on the person, or whether you're focused on the user. You know, if you traditionally sold into a head at an enterprise company and then they made a decision and declared that everyone in the organization needed to use that, that's not necessarily how people are always buying these days. Okay, I mean, so this is very different than 10 years ago. So consumers are very savvy buying technology. Right? It used to be 10 years ago, only IT knew how to buy technology. And so what's happening is they're going to the work world and they have an opinion about what's good technology. And they have access to tools and access to educate themselves. And so what the pressure is instead of necessarily selling to or marketing to the head of an organization that's going to decree or make a decision that everyone uses it, the users actually are getting educated themselves and going to the boss and saying, hey, I want to try using this. Or I've already started experimenting this. It's working for me. I want to share it with my peers, and it's almost like bottom up. And they don't demonstrate themselves with consumer behaviors. You know, it's not, the marketing channel and way to resonate with them would be very different, but it is like a consumer. You know, you're not necessarily, the decision maker might also be the user.
What you're saying totally makes sense. B2B isn't going anywhere. You still have people that make buying decisions, but gone are the days where the only way a user in a business scenario finds out through somebody ahead of them saying, oh, hey, we're trying out the software. Well, these days, that person's already tried the software. They might have already been using Slack and they build that up. And then they go up the chain and say, hey, we're using this. We want to try this out.
Yeah. And I like giving a personal example. I mean, it's not B2C. I mean, my wife, my kids, myself personally, whether it be like a fantasy basketball app or something like that, that's B2C. But I'll tell you, even at InnovateMap, we must use 30 distinct technologies, and very few of them have been sold or bought by us in a traditional B2B model with a rep and series of calls and so forth. It's really been our team found a product on their own, started using it, saw value, told the rest of the team. Next thing you know, we're all using it. Slack, Trello, you name it, Dropbox. And that's a phenomenon that people just need to pay attention to and make a decision whether that's the right call for their product or not.
Another byproduct of going directly to users, at least from my perspective, is that it changes the way that you can sort of talk to people. We had Kyle Lacy on in episode one that talked a lot about how Lesson Lee built a lot of trust by being honest and direct with people, and they leveraged an honest and genuine brand. Authenticity is big. Drift does it really well with Dave, and David Cancel, their CEO. They talk to people all the time and they're very genuine. B2B seems to almost put a veil over what you're doing and make you wear a suit in the way that you talk. But in the B2C world or a B2U where you're getting to talk to people, it almost seems like you can lift that veil and be a little bit more honest with people. Do you see that?
Oh yeah. What's happening is gone is the ability to convince them of something. Right? You're leveraging your brand to do a lot of the legwork and selling for you. And people are going to see through that. And so the dynamic of that is you're having more consumers and users making the buying decisions. They're going to buy products from brands that are authentic and resonate with them. Right? So if you really think about this dynamic, you don't have to convince. Gone is the day of convincing them. People are searching. They're getting educated on you. And in the sea of everything's a tech play, in very crowded spaces, companies that actually focus on their brand, and it is authentic, not just who they are, but what it is backed by a product that is authentic as well. I think we even had Kyle Lacy even cover this. Lesson Lee is a very good example of this. We talked about it in one of our other podcasts, but authentic brands are resonating. Some of the most successful companies today are having a very authentic brand that people resonate with, a great product backed by delivering insane customer experience. Those are a common pattern of what you would see right now winning companies. I cite like Dollar Shave Club, Casper, Warby Parker. I just think of these brands, right? I don't know if Dollar Shave Club is the best razor. I use it. I've given them my business for a long time. Why? I admired their brand when it came out, right? And that's a consumer type mentality that is creeping into the business world as users and team members are starting to be the ones that are making technology decisions. So something to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think it's a really great insight. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Mike. I think your thoughts were fantastic and a great way to recap what Dave told us from Drift. And you've got a unique perspective that kind of captures a lot of the trends that are going on in the startup space. And I personally hope that listeners that are in a B2B model listening is thinking, oh, that's not really our thing. We have to talk a certain way. Might start thinking that maybe there is something that you can do to sort of change the way that you operate to be more authentic and honest.
Thanks so much for listening to the show this week. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Until then, visit innovatemap.com/podcast and subscribe to learn how you can take your product to the next level. As always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Hit us up on Twitter at InnovateMap or shoot us an email at podcast@innovatemap.com.
I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And you've been listening to Better Product.
Better Product.
Drop mic.